I want to talk about is weather, where we are headed, but also from a perspective of where we've been. And that perspective is from that of an OF. The O stands for old. There's three different things that I want to talk about, particularly today: radar, data, and displays. And hopefully in 13 and a half minutes, I'll say in conclusion, but it hasn't worked in the past. And, you know, we're always excited about this next thing that's on the horizon, and we definitely are excited about some of the next things on the horizon. But sometimes in the rush to see what's new, we kind of forget some tried and true things that are really great and are very effective and helpful to the viewer. And so I want to spend a little bit of time on both of those areas. Radar. My first radar came out of an airplane, and I can remember taking a slide and putting it in the slide chain, and then we'd overlay that radar display and hope that it was close. But it was fascinating. It was terrific, and for the first time, we were actually able to see intensities live someplace. It gave us a little bit of an advantage as far as knowing what was going on with the weather. That was a long, long time ago. And then came Doppler. And here was this new technology, came out in the 80s, and what a marvelous prospect. All of a sudden, we could see the winds, and we were seeing things that we had never seen before. Actually, I'm going to date somebody here, but how many of you remember the original 4 outbound, 4 inbound? How many hands? Yeah, and what was interesting was that you got the outbounds and then it folded and you had inbounds that were reversed. And that's how you knew that you were continuing to look. It was kind of confusing. But I also think of some of those folks who were early adopters and who did such wonderful things with the new technology. The name actually that leaps first to mind is the late Gary Shore, who could pick a tornado out of that mess and did such a wonderful job of it so many times in Tulsa. It really wasn't until our company started looking at velocities and how we could make it easier for an operator and the viewer to understand that we developed shear displays, looking at the gate-to-gate shear. Not these colors mean inbound and these colors mean outbound, but here's where the shear is. Here's where there's a dangerous twisting of the winds, and it's 80 miles an hour, or whatever it might be. And that was the first time we were able to really make it clear to the viewer what was going on with the weather. I've got an example here. This is not from 20 years ago. It was just a little bit back, Bay News 9.
And we do have a red ring that has just shown up on our radar here. I want to zoom in closer. Again, the area of concern is around Fort Meade from U.S. Highway 17. This is U.S. Highway 98. It is indicating that there's a possibility of some rotation now in the lower levels of the atmosphere. I do not have any reports right now that there is a tornado, but there could definitely be.
And I did a whole lot better back in those days, too. I doubt that we're actually going to be able to show any of these. This was an example, and it was from Bay News 9, and unfortunately, a very good example that I can't pass along to you. But where you've got a pattern,
and we do have a red
green, except where there's this dangerous twisting of the winds, and she clicks on it, and there's 70 mile per hour winds, advising the public in advance of a dangerous storm, and then the National Weather Service issuing a warning, anticipation and result. It's the way things should work, and it's the way the audience out there understands what's going on, and they don't say, "Well, this happened without warning." And we've been able, I think, to develop over time this new technology. Well, now we fast forward by 20 years. Actually, we're going to fast forward a lot, I think, on this presentation. But it was the dawn of dual pole. And again, what a marvelous prospect. We not only can
and
see
we do have a red,
all these
red
other things, but we can see precipitation type. It's and other things. And once again, for early adopters, they're being able to see things that nobody else can see. By the way, those early adopters are all Barron clients because we've installed every broadcast dual pole radar in the world so far. But they are able to see some things, and they're going to be able to see more. It's the tip of the iceberg, and I think that's a precipitation type. I'm not sure. many of you were able to see Dr. Chandra's short course on dual pole, which was outstanding. As a matter of fact, it was to play to a packed house. He had a lot more people than I do. But in case you weren't there, there was a few things that I do want to pass along. One is that the National Weather Service has awarded a $43 million contract for the upgrade of the 171 NextRad radars across the country. That contract went to L3 Communications and Barron Services. We won the contract. They will be doing the installation and the maintenance. We are responsible for the manufacturer of the hardware and for what I think is a very, very important and a very exciting collaboration with the National Weather Service in developing new processing. This is the majority of the money actually is being spent toward the latter, the actual hardware and the development of new processes. I look at it as a public-private opportunity to develop some of the things that we did for Doppler in this dual pole arena. And I believe that very soon the broadcasters will start benefiting from some new things that we learn with this exciting new technology. How many of you have been on television for 20 years? 1988? All right, how many of you been here on the air for 10 years? 1998. How many for less than that? Yeah, well, there's a few. There's a lot happened over the last 20 years, and I want to talk about data for just a minute. In 1992, we introduced our storm tracking technology. That was followed in 1994 with an automated process which used attributes to automatically track storms. That attribute table is something that Joe Schaefer said they never realized was embedded in the composite reflectivity, or they never would have released it. It was never intended for tracking storms, and but it happened to be part of composite reflectivity, and we found it. So we sought to maximize the information that was available in that attribute table then and now. There is the identification of a centroid of each storm that the radar is tracking, and the strength of that storm, the direction and the speed of that storm. So you can use it to make an arrow that defines where the storm is now and where it would be in 15 minutes. However, it deals with the centroid of a storm, and it's part of the process that goes on at the end of each volume scan, which is 5 minutes after the first information is received. It actually works out pretty well, and this is good. I'm glad we got something up here. You can see the red arrow. This is actually a tornado that hit Fort Worth unexpectedly in March of 2000. And the upper arrow is the arrow that you would get with if you posted a mesocyclone. There we go. This arrow right here. That's approximately the storm center. If you did an automatic storm track on that point, our clients were told to tell the folks that this is the center of the storm, this is the direction it's moving, and folks in this area could expect heavy rains and probably some very heavy hail. And then you clicked on this arrow, which is our shear skit. It works off of gate-to-gate shear, and you moved it down and you clicked on that storm, and it would create another storm track, which would define for those who were at threat for shear, or for the couplet that was seen on the radar. In this particular case, the difference between this, the storm centroid, and where the gate-to-gate shear was located is 7 miles. So not a valid product, but it was a useful product. And so there were two things that were problematic. One was that it was dealing with the storm centroid, and the second was it's the end of the volume scan. How do you fix that? I mean, what would you do given that information? Now, please, not everybody at once. I know you were about to say that we would process every radial of every radar, the velocity information, and we'd do that as soon as the lowest level information was available. That way, you wouldn't know whether you had a tornado, but you knew where the threat was, and you could encircle it and get that information out almost in real time. Certainly a lot faster than the 5-minute delay associated with processing all of the cuts from the radar. And the second thing that you could do would be to deal with not the centroid, but where the gate-to-gate shear was located. We did both. And that was that resulted in our being able to automatically track storms and correct. There are a lot of other things that we've done, but those were kind of the first and initial things that corrected for trying to track storms with storm attributes when it was not intended to do that ever. I can tell you, 15 years later, that if it's not barren, it's not corrected. It's using those original attributes, and that's why storm tracking in some cases has gotten a bad name. But conversely, if you identify a storm and you show a storm track and you tell people when they can expect this adverse weather, people will respond a whole lot better than just about anything else that you can do. Very, very important, and I think we as a company have kind of gotten away from the importance of that over the last years because we want to show you the newest, latest, and greatest stuff. So speaking of the latest and greatest stuff, you know you got a twisting in the atmosphere, but how do you know whether it's a tornado? One of the things that you can do is to check the near environment. We know what's happening in this storm, but what's it moving into? If we could marry some rapid modeling with the actual dynamics of the storm, we can get a better picture of what is happening and which storms would have the best prospect of turning tornadic. We got Glenn up there, good. Enter the BTI, Barren Tornado Index. It is experimental, but if you give it a value from 1 to 10, the question is, do high values indicate a better tornado chance? And the answer is yes, absolutely. Do rapidly increasing values indicate a better tornado chance? Yes. Do values significantly higher than surrounding storms indicate a higher tornadic chance? Probably. It's good science, but it also is good TV. And that's the reason that we've got Glenn up here. Glenn, I don't think, oh good, you didn't walk out. What would you tell folks when you use this new tornado index, what happened as far as ratings in your market?
The verification was there. We could direct our reporters to that site. The verification was the most important thing, and we saved people's lives. And the reaction to that was unbelievable. The response of over 100,000 emails was quite testimony to what we did.
Thank you. Dave Brown. Had the same circumstance with a series of severe storms in the Memphis area. Dave, what happened with you?
Well, it was a February 5th outbreak, and we were the first in the free world to use BTI. I don't know if it worked or not. It did. We had several
So that their time doesn't count against me. Anyway, and I guess I better hurry, but we're very appreciative of the work that our client stations are doing, and it is making a difference already in the various markets. I want to talk quickly about display, maybe more display and data. We introduced Fast Track in 1994. It was the first live weather tool in the marketplace. I think you're going to be able to, you can buy anything that's video. We introduced this product in 1994. Now that was 14 years ago. And for the first 10 years, it was the only live weather tool in most weather offices. I mean, you think about that. But it was originally hooked to live radars, and then we made it so that it would work with NextRad. But for 14 years now, it served as a really good, quick, clean, 2D storm tracker system. We recognized, however, almost immediately by 1997 that we needed a new platform because we really wanted to be able to show the different levels of the radar information. We wanted to be able to show weather information, at least, in 3D. And we couldn't with the current technology. So we developed this new platform that was designed to handle the technology and called it Viper. 1997 is when we introduced it. And it was the first 3D weather pseudo 3D mapping live tool that combined with our BAMS modeling really did an excellent job in providing information to the audience during the 2004-2005 hurricane season. In many places in Florida, for instance, Viper is a household name because it did a very good job of identifying significant activity associated with a hurricane and providing that information to the public. Bob, I think folks in New Orleans felt very comfortable with what you were providing them on Viper. But we also we've recognized now, and this has been, 11 years, almost a dozen years later, that we do need a new platform. In the last 3 years, we've dedicated to developing a 3D everything platform. I was taking their time.
Bob, my friend.
Can I get one more?
The producer gave him 30 minutes instead of 15. So you are doing correctly, but we actually have another person added.
Let me say one thing,
please.
Okay? One thing. I always run long. In conclusion, radar, dual pole, tip of the iceberg, new tech. Data, Barron Tornado Index, tip of the iceberg, new tech. Displays, Omni, tip of the iceberg, new tech. And that makes me very excited about the future. But we're not building displays to sell data. We're developing displays and data to help you serve your viewers. And don't forget about the past. Storm tracking, showing a viewer what the threat is as clearly as you can, who's going to be affected over time, is the information that they're really looking for. And I go on, but I sense that I need to stop. So thank you.